This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome a returning guest back to the show, and that is James Altucher. When he was on a couple of years ago, we had a great conversation about his book at the time, a concept I very much support, which is Choose Yourself. And since then, he's developed a huge podcast following, The Altucher Show. He's a former hedge fund manager, knows a lot about the economy, and he's been looking into the epidemiology of the COVID-19 situation. He also lives in New York City. You know, he's the author of a bunch of books. I won't even go through all the titles, but there's so many. He's prolific. Anyway, it's great to have James Altucher back on the show. James, how you doing?
Jason, thanks so much. Thanks for having me back on, and I super appreciate it. It's too bad. It's such unfortunate circumstances that bring us back together on the show, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is, that's for sure. But, you know, there's a lot of opportunities right now, too. And whenever there's a crisis, you know, like the Chinese say, crisis and opportunity are the same thing. Their thing is literally translated, crisis is opportunity riding the dangerous wind. It's kind of interesting.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And
is that like the saying, ancient curse, may you live in interesting times? Because it's
that's a little different, but and they used to say that a lot during the Great Recession, for sure. And so these are interesting times. You know, being in New York City, man, you're just on the forefront of it. So tell us kind of the big picture of what's going on, what you're thinking, what you're interviewing a lot of people. Just what's the zeitgeist in the James Altucher world right now?
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up New York City, in that between New York City and New Jersey, those two areas alone are more cases and sadly deaths than the other 48 states combined. Mm-hmm. So my view, when I hear the news and when I walk out and see what's happening on the street, I imagine it's probably very different from, you know, somebody from other parts of the country where maybe the shutdown is not as restrictive, or maybe there's just not as many cases or not as many deaths. Like, you know, you take Georgia, for instance, right next to Florida, which is reopening a big portion of their economy today. Mm-hmm. And they've had, 800 deaths out of a population of 10 million. Georgia itself has an economy in the tens of billions. So, you know, it's a different perspective. Here, everyone is, I just feel this atmosphere of anxiety and fear and stress, and nobody wants to, everybody's locked down. And there was all these panicky headlines weeks ago. Oh, the hospitals were about to get overrun. So Trump sent the USS Comfort, the right. Javits Center, the ship got turned into, yeah, a hospital. Right. I myself visited the 10 hospitals on Central Park just to see what was going on. They were empty. All of these places were empty. They never did overwhelm the hospital system.
That's great. So they flattened the curve in time that we didn't overwhelm the hospitals. And interestingly, you say that, James, because being in New York, certainly you know about the conspiracy theories that are starting to float like crazy. And, you know, one is where they're getting people to crowdsource video of hospitals in their neighborhoods, right? And you see like these, you know, barricades set up for people to get in line and nobody's there. Now, I don't know how real or fake this stuff is. I just know it's interesting. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, before the peak, I went out to do a little bit of that crowdsourcing myself just to see, mm-hmm, what's going on.
Yep.
There was nobody anywhere. Yep. And I spoke to people who were coming in and out of the hospital. I spoke to doctors. I spoke to priests who were coming in and out. And like, thank God, I'm not even saying like, see, you were wrong, it's nothing. like, okay, they took a worst case scenario and they wanted to be cautious and, mm-hmm. and take every precaution.
And that's good. But, that's good.
But I do think, though, this speaks to the larger issue of we made, and I say we, the government and the population made huge, huge trillion-dollar, multi-trillion-dollar decisions off of mathematical models that not once were correct. Mm-hmm. They weren't even close to correct.
Right.
Like back in January, early February, there were newspaper articles saying around the world, 140 million people might die. That was the first article I ever saw about this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I had a report out of either Imperial or Harvard or both that said there would be millions of deaths in the U.S. And, you know, up to 10 million deaths in the U.S. was the first number I heard. And then it got kept coming down. And every single model was wrong. March 25th, the IHME came out with a model that said there would be 60,000 hospitalizations in New York City alone by April 1st, just mm-hmm. 6 days later. Right. Well, 6 days later, there were 12,000 hospitalizations. They were 80% off in a model they had made just 6 days earlier. And these were all the scientists we were relying on to make multi-trillion dollar decisions about shutting down people's livelihoods and mm-hmm. careers and you know, all the deaths and stress and collateral fatalities that ended up resulting. You know, if you're in stage 3 liver cancer and you wanted to see if you had stage 4, that was considered an elective procedure, so you couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So you still can't do it. So this is creating a problem for the entire system. Yeah. And everyone will say, oh, are you choosing the stock market over your grandma's life?
Right.
No, that's not it at all. Like, yeah. People are suffering. Like, there's right. calls to the Bronx for child abuse hotlines are mm-hmm. 6 times higher.
Yep.
Even in Indiana.
Suicide hotlines are 800% higher, calls to suicide hotlines.
It's insane. So I really just – who knows what the right decision was, but, you know, everybody was scared. But I wish the media hadn't fanned the flames of that hysteria, because hysteria now is turning into history and mm-hmm. – you know, hopefully we climb out of this. But yeah, so that's a long answer. But also in terms of the economy, I think, you know, we're going from a period of great uncertainty to a little bit more certainty, mm-hmm. which is that the economy will reopen. The stimulus packages now too have been passed, plus the Federal Reserve stimulus. And the virus seems to have peaked in the U.S. And maybe there'll be a second wave, maybe not. That's part of the unknowns. But we know some things now for certain that we didn't know even like 3 or 4 weeks ago. So that's a good thing. But now going into this new abnormal, I'll call it, is there's a lot of uncertainty too, which is what industries will collapse, because there's going to be a few. And, you know, we don't know about the second wave of the virus. But now that we have a lot of data about the virus, hopefully we can say, well, okay, we don't have to shut down the entire economy this time. And we'll see. But you know, there's definitely been a lot of interesting data about the economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. You know, I mean, going forward, first off, what type of recovery do you think it'll be? And before you answer, I'll tell you what I think. So, you know, we've all heard, is it going to be a V-shaped recovery? That's the hopeful picture. Is it going to be a U with a big ugly trough? Is it going to be an L-shaped recovery? I think it's going to be kind of like a modified square root sign, meaning that the square root sign usually, you know, it goes down, then it goes up higher. I think this one's going to be down. It's going to be down in the V and then up, but lower than the start. I think this is a lasting issue. You know, it's going to have a huge hangover on the economy. And I think the economy is going to shrink. I think there's going to be a form of PTSD, I hate to say, where travel isn't going to resume. It's going to be a slow slog to get back to the new normal. I mean, there will certainly be a lot of opportunities. I'm not being like negative. I just think there's, you know, there's always a lot of repositioning, right? When something like this happens. But your thoughts?
I mean, look, this is a bigger disaster than, and I'm not even talking about the pandemic. The economic shutdown is a bigger disaster than what happened in the economy after 9/11, what happened in the economy after 2008, 2009, which was a pretty big disaster, by the way. I mean,
no question.
The financial system collapsed and they had to bail it out. There was no cash left and they had to put cash into the system. And 9/11, the country feared it was under attack, and certainly things were affected permanently, like travel and airports and our relationships with the Middle East and so on, and banking kind of changed forever after 2008 and 2009. I mean, it was just starting to come back.
If you walk into a bank now with a couple million bucks, instead of saying, hey, you know, we're glad to have you, and by the way, here's your free toaster, it's like, oh, we're suspicious. You might be a terrorist or a money launderer. It's just totally the Patriot Act is you know, the know your customers. It's just changed everything. Yeah. It's like you have a scarlet letter on, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of things are going to change now, and I think some of them we could probably guess about, and some of them we can't. But, you know, it's funny just debating the different shapes. I think I'm more in your camp about how I see more of a W than a V.
Right.
So, you know, we go up a little, which is what's already happened. We're kind of like at the peak of the W. And then we're going to have to go down again because as long as you keep seeing insanity happen – those are all canaries in the coal mine. So like what happened with the oil futures contracts 2 days ago going negative, that's never happened before. Yep. That's a little bit of insanity. Like I even see experts being quoted in newspaper articles talking about, oh, the physical delivery of oil, nobody wants to take your oil. These were cash settled contracts. There was no oil involved. It was just it was just a big insane thing that happened. But as long as there's insanity happening, there's no way that we have the enough certainty in the market to just go straight up from here, no matter what the stimulus does. Second, the stimulus is hitting, but there's nothing to hit. The economy now is like a patient on life support. Right. This is a Band-Aid at best, and you have to have a living patient that's walking around before the stimulus can work. So we don't quite know for sure. We know what's going to happen, that the economy is going to wake up, but we don't know when and in what, how many phases.
And by the way, if I just keep your thought there, please don't forget. But what you're kind of referring to is, and we've been talking a lot about this rare malady of supply demand shock, you know, which sort of was pronounced in the 70s. And so we've seen demand destruction, obviously, but I think we're going to see supply destruction too, because for example, oil is a, you know, a great example, right? Look at this is a prediction. It may be totally wrong, of course, but you know, now we have demand destruction and there's like gluts of oil and oil's cheap and you know, they're having tankers store oil that they're not moving the oil. They're just storing the oil, right? It's a totally weird situation, but now these oil companies go out of business. And when things do recover, there's a lot less supply. So same with the airlines. Like I did a Google Flights search today, and I've been looking at flights. Just interesting. I don't want to go anywhere. I'm just doing it as a study.
Sure.
And to go, I live in Palm Beach, Florida. So to go from Miami to LAX, which is like an easy route, you know, take a direct flight, it's really expensive. In fact, looking at the chart on Google Flights of the last 60, 75 days, it's at the highest price it's been. And if you looked just 3 weeks ago for that flight, it was dirt cheap. Okay. 4 or 5 weeks ago, cheap, right? Because you had lots of supply and no demand. And now that the airlines have grounded a lot of their flights and canceled their routes, you have, you know, a small amount of demand, but a lot less supply too. So it sounded like you were sort of alluding to that, and I just wanted to bring that out as a discussion point.
Yeah, I mean, with oil, like, so I
And not oil in particular, just generally widgets, but oil's an example. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think because this is such a weird thing, this lack of demand is not based on where the economy was heading a few months ago. It's this forced lack of demand because we're all being told to stay at home, which I'm not questioning one way or the other. That's not what this is about. But so I own part of a private oil company, and we just stopped producing the oil. Like we realized there's not going to be any demand, and there was no reason to pump more oil out, and we'll start pumping again when there's demand. I think that's what most oil companies are going to be doing. So it's – I don't know if the oil companies necessarily are going to go out of business. Some places will, like you know, the average small business, like a restaurant, only had 16 days of cash in the bank. They might not have gotten their small business loans. Hardly any small businesses actually got the small business loans.
It's so unfair.
A lot of storefront businesses are going to go out of business. A lot of small mom-and-pop businesses, sadly, are going to go out of business. I don't know how you really avoid that. They're trying to. I mean, the premise of the $2.2 trillion stimulus package and then an additional $450 billion as of yesterday, the premise is that $2.5 trillion of money is not going to be spent this quarter. So that's what they've calculated. You know,
give us that number again.
Well, like every quarter, the GDP of a quarter, the GDP of a year is about $20 trillion. And every quarter, that's $5 trillion.
Yeah.
And they kind of think there's about 40 to 50%. Yeah.
Okay.
So then this is the government. This is what I'm getting.
Sure.
This was on my podcast with the, I had on my podcast the other day, the deputy chairman of the St. Louis Federal Reserve. So he was telling me his reasoning is that between $2 and $3 trillion would be withdrawn from the economy because we're all not spending money while in our houses.
Yep.
And so they created $2 to $3 trillion of stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's supposedly going to replace what we lost in terms of money. But again, all that stimulus is going to end up just sitting in a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so the velocity of money needs an economy to be flourishing.
Right.
Otherwise, people won't spend. They just keep the money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And the money doesn't have the intended effect on the economy. So to your point, you'd have to put in $5 or $6 trillion. If the economy is truly going to slow down, you'd have to put in trillions more to make up the same amount that last year's $2 trillion was. So the point is that if we do have this PTSD, then you're right. We're going to see much more of a slowdown in the data in Q3 and Q4 than we expected. It won't be the V-shaped surge that some economists and government officials are predicting. Now, we don't really know, though. I mean, the one theory is, like you said, we're going to have this PTSD. We're going to realize we don't need to go out as much. We're going to enjoy staying at home.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's sort of like we're drug addicts and we were addicted to the economy and spending money.
Yep.
And now we're in drug rehab.
Yeah.
Typically in drug
That's
rehab.
A good way to put it. Yeah.
Typically in drug rehab, we stop using drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we get out of rehab, we start hanging out with our old friends and go in our old hangouts and we start using again.
We relapse,
Right. So theoretically, we could relapse also. I think this is one of the uncertain things. I could say now, I'm never getting on a plane again, or I'm never going to a restaurant again. But when I can and my wife wants to go to a restaurant, I'll do it. I'm not, and I actually own a bar.
Uh-huh.
So
yep.
I hope people return to bars, but we'll see. A dirty, disgusting petri dish of disease like a bar.
Right. Yeah.
Like the bar I own, at least.
Yeah.
And, but I think it's an unknown and we'll see. But I'm more inclined to think just the mechanics of it is more like a W, although I do think the stimulus will be enough. Not necessarily the short-term stimulus that Congress is passing, although that will help, but the Federal Reserve stimulus, which is cutting the interest rates, buying mortgage-backed securities, buying corporate debt, that's almost going to be forced to lift the economy. But people don't realize federal stimulus, even this extreme, doesn't kick in for a good 6 to 12 months at least.
Yeah.
So we've got a while before that kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
You made a great metaphor there of the patient that's on life support, right? And so, you know, you can pump money, but pumping money, you know, it doesn't solve every problem. It's the usual tool that the Federal Reserve goes to. It's the sort of their go-to thing, you know. In fact, it's just funny, 9/11, you know, a Great Recession now, you know, whenever you have like a G7 meeting, the whole thing is like, how much money do we pump into the system, right? You know, that's always the solution. But in this case, it doesn't totally, it's not the panacea it is sometimes, right?
Right. Like in 2000, basically we're following the playbook of 2009, 2008, 2009. So the Federal Reserve over the past two, three decades has gotten a lot more sophisticated about the ways they can help the economy. So back in the 90s, Alan Greenspan would just cut rates and that would do it.
Yeah.
After 9/11, there were some stimulus checks and it was mostly just cutting rates. But after 2008, 2009, it wasn't just cutting rates. It was also encouraging banks to have excess reserves by raising the interest rates that the Fed would pay banks on those excess reserves. They started buying, you know, mortgage-backed securities and going out a little bit further than just treasury bills. And they're doing more of that now. They're doing the same but more now. And again, you're right. If nobody's buying goods, it does nothing to help the economy. It does zero.
Yeah.
So somebody their economy has to move first. And is this stimulus enough? Are the right people getting it? Was this the right macroeconomic theory? I don't know. This is a giant experiment. $2 trillion, just like to replace spending. I don't know if that. We'll see if it works. I mean, it's probably better than nothing. And then we have massive deflation right now on some things, but like you pointed out, depending on how efficient the industry is, there might be inflation. And then, of course, structurally, does all this increase in dollars result in inflation? is unclear. Right now, the rest of the world buys our dollars, and that's a deflationary pressure. But I do think specifically you're going to see things like commercial real estate has to have a mini financial crisis after this. WeWork's going to go out of business.
Restaurants. You're saying mini? I think that's going to be a maxi crisis.
Yeah, right. I guess I agree. I'm just afraid
You're being optimistic. Yeah.
It's like I don't want to say to my wife, why didn't you get the maxi pads instead of the mini? Like, it's like, don't do that. Okay. Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen when WeWork goes out of business, which is 100% chance,
right?
Like the average – they're the biggest real estate renter for commercial real estate in New York City and other cities.
I know.
So if you have a building and suddenly eight floors or your renter just disappears and you got to clean it out, find another renter.
And WeWork was already a scam you know, before this. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
SoftBank used this as an
excuse to pull
the plug.
That was a smart decision. So poor Adam Neumann, he's only going to be a millionaire, not a billionaire.
I think he pulled out like $700 million, he'll survive. But I don't know if he could feed his kids in a few years, but we'll see.
Right.
But what are all these commercial real estate companies going to do? They live on borrowed money and now borrowed time. And they're not going to survive. The entire industry is going to change. Airlines, despite a bailout, are probably going to go out of business. Cruise lines. I don't know if Las Vegas is going to be able to stay in business. Are you going to Las Vegas anytime soon after this? Like, would you even plan that?
That's the PTSD kind of concept that I'm talking about. Like,
You
know, I mean, this may sound weird, but, and I don't mean to minimize the quarantines and the depressive effect it's having on people's psychology, but personally, for a guy who jumped on a plane 2-3 times a month, I love it. I just love not owning an airline ticket, having no plans. I'm enjoying this time of just being a homebody. I actually really quite like it. I know that's not true of everybody. You know what?
Well, they go out to the beach.
Yeah, I'm in Palm Beach, Florida. So they just reopened the beaches, and I have not been yet. I don't know why they closed them in the first place. I can see closing them down for spring break parties and stuff, sure, but just a regular beach that's not part of the scene, that seems sort of silly to me that they closed them.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of evidence that vitamin D and the sunshine helps.
The UD helps get
the virus. Yeah. And kids need to go outside and run around and play.
No question.
You know, Central Park here is I don't want to say it's crowded, but there's a lot of people there even right this moment, and there's appropriate social distancing and masks and so on.
As long as people are doing the thing right. But what I meant to say by that is that as part of the PTSD concept, I think people will get used to and maybe be okay with a little bit of a simpler life. I admit that right after this is over, it's kind of like if you live in a place with inclement weather a lot, the first sunny day, everybody's out, right? And, you know, like your wife wants to go to a restaurant. Sure, I get it. But after a while, I think the new normal will be like a lessening of a demand for that. You know, fewer trips, fewer cruises, fewer restaurants, fewer bar, you know. I mean, people will still do it. I just don't think it'll be as often.
Yeah, that could be like, look at after 2009. I bet you if we did a Google trend search on minimalism, you know, and then you had the whole Marie Kondo thing and so on. I bet you minimalism really became in vogue after 2009, kind of the not that it was the death of consumerism, but it was a sickness.
Yeah.
And probably a similar thing will happen here. And I think what I'm seeing when I talk to people, and who knows if it sticks, is that the whole kind of lifestyle influencer you see on Instagram and TikTok, I feel like that's over, and people now are looking for more mental health solutions, stress solutions, spiritual solutions. Yeah. And how does that translate into the economy? Look, there's definitely going to be some cheap stocks out there, like we're talking right now over the internet, and bandwidth has increased so much that companies like Netflix and YouTube are saying we're going to decrease the bandwidth quality or the bandwidth needs of our videos for a short term because there's so much demand now.
Right. They did that in Italy when the quarantine first happened there.
And so chips that help for bandwidth or chips that help for gaming or virtual reality, those are going to skyrocket. Of course, Amazon's always going to do well. Google's always going to do well. You know, tech companies will do well. Oil companies will bounce back because there will be demand again for, you know, oil fuels so much of the world economy. It's, you know, even going back to a $30 oil price or $40 oil price, you know, which will happen within a year or two easily, particularly with the stimulus. Oil, you know, you have companies like Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, which have gone from 66 to 32 during this crisis, pays a 10% dividend. Those companies, and yeah. they're not cutting their dividend anytime soon.
Right.
Those companies are going to exist.
James, share your hot stock tips. I almost bought Carnival Cruises when it got really cheap. I mean, maybe it still is, but that's a real risky one. But Exxon's cheap. I mean, I'm not even a Wall Street guy. I like real estate. I think income property is the most historically proven asset class in the entire world. I love
my
rental properties. But you know, I'm getting greedy. I'm getting tempted on the stock market. So fire away with a couple of tips. So you like Shell?
Yeah, I like Shell. And, you know, again, I think the market as a whole, if you want to take a risk, don't buy, you know, the Spiders SPY, which is this ETF that represents the S&P 500, represents right. the overall market. Yeah. I like RVT a little bit better. It's the mm-hmm. Royce Value Trust. It also represents the entire market, but it's a closed-end fund, mm-hmm. so it trades at a significant discount to the assets it owns. So it's like buying the market at a discount. And because of the current volatility, they're at a larger than normal discount. So you get mm-hmm. the upside of the discount closing. It's a little bit in the weeds here, but RVT is a better way to buy the whole market is what I'm saying. I like there's a drone company, AVAV, and drones are going to do good. They're already testing out drones for delivery now. Like anything that was going to happen in 10 years mm-hmm. is going to happen tomorrow.
You know, that's interesting you say that because, you know, one of my favorite economists is Joseph Schumpeter, right? Creative destruction.
Yeah.
And what any crisis does, since necessity is the mother of invention, is it just brings the future closer to us. We had all the online tools. We had Zoom. We had Skype before. But now everybody's been forced to use them, even people that really resisted that. You know, a bunch of the mastermind groups I'm in, for example, you know, they're doing Zoom meetings. And I'm thinking, do we really, after this is over, do we really need to meet in person again? It's so much easier to just have a Zoom meeting, right?
No, I agree. Like, I used to do all my podcasts in person for years and years until this lockdown.
Right.
And now I'm loving doing the podcast remotely, not because mm-hmm. I don't want to see people in person, right. but it allows me to prepare right up until the very last minute.
Right.
I don't have to go anywhere. I could take. It's easier for me to take notes during the mm-hmm. podcast. Podcasts are just as high quality. It's easy for me to book guests mm-hmm. actually because they don't have to be in the city.
Right.
So, and it shows me I don't have to be in the city either. I could mm-hmm. be anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do think things are going to change. I do think the stimulus eventually will work. And so I'm hoping we'll see a mini surge in Q3, Q4 of this year. And then mm-hmm. in 2021, I'm hoping we see the big surge as people finally, you know, start buying real estate again or start traveling more again. But, you know, I do think there's too much uncertainty at the moment. And although there are bargains, I probably wouldn't dive in. By the way, you know what's been interesting too is law enforcement. So mm-hmm. in England, there's been a surge of knife attacks against police because there's a little bit of social unrest. And I shouldn't just say England. I should say all countries in the U.S. too.
Yeah. Well, anywhere they have gun control, you get more knife attacks, you know. So yeah.
Right, and there's a little bit more social unrest right now. And I don't know. I think, you know, any search right now I'm out of the markets completely. I own one stock. So I'm not recommending this stock. I'm biased.
Which
one? So it's called Wrap Technologies, WRTC, uh-huh. and they introduced a non-lethal weapon. And, you know, I don't really know anything more than anyone about it, but it's the one stock I own because I do think the world is moving towards, you know, non-lethal police forces for a solution. No, you know, police officers don't want to wake up in the morning and say, today's the day I shoot somebody.
Yeah, right.
They want an alternative between beating someone up and shooting someone. And this this Wrap Technologies has a weapon or a device that wraps a cable around you at the speed of sound.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And you can't move. Oh. And so it's like Batman. And people, states and countries and governments need something like this.
Yeah.
So it's the one thing I own. I feel it's economy independent. There's always going to be a police force and security guards for stores and so on. And so that's the one thing I own. But I am looking at drone companies like AVAV, iRobot, IRBT, NVIDIA, the chip maker, NVDA, Palo Alto Networks, whatever their symbol is, I forget, Royal Dutch Shell on the oil side. You know, and then I'm just seeing if there's – I'm curious what you think. I don't really see any deep, deep value stocks yet also, which makes me nervous.
Yeah, I'm not thinking like it's totally time to dive into everything yet, but again, I'm not a stock expert. But I do want to ask you about this. So last week, I interviewed Dottie Herman, the CEO of Douglas Elliman Real Estate, on the show. And of course, she's a New Yorker like you. She was in the Hamptons when we did the interview. And we talked about my...
Then she's not a New Yorker, by the way.
Okay.
Everybody says they're a New Yorker, and they all...
Then they bail.
New York City, yeah, right. Went to the Hamptons... Yeah. And I'm a New Yorker.
I'm in the middle of New York City right now. I own a bar
in New York City. I'm a New Yorker. I'm right across the street from my bar. I'm here with the gang.
You're the real deal. Sticking it out. Okay. All right. All
born
right.
Here.
Yeah. Good deal. So anyway,
she said.
Well, I asked her about my theory that after the lockdowns lift, will there be a mass migration from high density to low density living? And, you know, again, it could be just 10% of the people that live in high-density areas. And high-density defined by not just New York City, but by anything where you're typically living in a five-story or more building where you're forced to take an elevator and you're very likely to be using mass transit. Okay. You know, even after there's a vaccine, better treatments, whatever, I think there is going to be kind of a PTSD, a sort of suspicious nature with people that, hey, you know, maybe there's going to be another virus. You know, what's the next one? Will it be SARS again? Will it be, you know, hey, remember, you know, now everybody's suddenly watching and learning about the Spanish flu back in 1918. So will there be this mass migration like that? And interestingly, she has a self-interest. She runs a big New York real estate brokerage, and she says, I think people are moving. I guess on one side you get a lot of listings, but ultimately you want people moving into your market to make money long-term.
Well, don't forget, she sells also in, I mean, Douglas Elliman, the company, sells in or represents people in Westchester, the Hamptons, New Jersey,
the suburbs. Some of it's suburbia. Yeah, got it.
So she benefits either way, but it's interesting. She says that. I agree, though, because who's going to come out of this day one and say, you know what, I'm going to finally move to New York City.
Yeah, like, right.
I don't care that they might have a second wave and they'll shut down the whole economy again and maybe there'll be riots in the streets. I'm just going to buy. And furthermore, no one's going to say, I can't wait to fulfill my lifelong dream of starting a pizza restaurant in the middle of Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just not going to do that.
Right.
So
yeah.
I agree with you. And that means there's going to be less things to enjoy in New York City and more reasons to move away. And not just in the suburbs of New York, but down to Florida. I was just looking at real estate prices in Florida.
Yeah. Come on down. The weather is beautiful. In fact, James, I coined a new term just yesterday to describe Florida. Now, note that I'm from California almost all of my life, the socialist republic with super high taxes, worse than New York, by the way.
Yeah, 20.9%.
Slightly worse, yeah. And I moved here 2 years ago, and I've coined a new phrase. I call it Florida has luxury weather. luxury weather. It's a new kind of weather. Luxury weather. Yeah.
I love
it's
Florida
beautiful.
Weather. I love right where you are. Palm Beach, that whole area.
Yeah.
Palm Beach, Boca Raton, Fort Lauderdale, Del Rey, Miami. I like that whole quadrant. Yeah. But
come down and bring your Missile Command game. Is that Missile Command behind you?
No, Missile Command is a horizontal box. That is Defender, Joust, Stargate, Robotron, the more vertical games.
You're reminding me of being a teenager when I used to play video games all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's why I got this. It's $300 for that box. You should get it. It's got 50 games on it.
That's amazing.
But what I'm hearing from real estate brokers is that the listing prices have not yet changed, but the offers are coming in 20 to 50% lower right now.
Oh.
Now, maybe people think they're going to get a bargain and maybe that's going to be over once the economy reopens, but some of those offers have been accepted as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just not seeing the change in listing prices, but apparently they're seeing, and I don't know if she had any insight into this, but apparently they are seeing the change in offers out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see if that holds. Again, it's one of the unknown unknowns.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yes, Rumsfeld.
It's in the Rumsfeld known unknown matrix.
I love it. Well, hey, is there anything else you want to share with our audience? You know, just anything I haven't asked you. I know, you've got so many books. I wouldn't even know where to go with your books. There's just so many. But I loved Choose Yourself, the concept that there's no gatekeeper. And about a year from now, you got another great book about skipping the line, which I can't wait to read that one.
Well, I think I just want to remind people that even if there is this PTSD, even if your job seems insecure or it's over or you were furloughed a little too easily and you get nervous or this time alone has made you think you don't really want to go back to your job or career, just I think there are a lot of opportunities out there. I think the there is going to be money in the economy. So the stimulus is a very real trillions and trillions of dollars. Between Congress and the Federal Reserve, we're talking like $6-7 trillion. That's real money, and the dollar is not going to inflate so quickly. There will be opportunities when everyone else is scared to kind of step up and change your life if you want, or start a business, or invest in yourself. Maybe don't buy stocks. Maybe start taking a photography class and you know, change careers, or come up with an idea for, you know, any kind of business.
Well, but James, actually, you know, you wrote 40 alternatives to college, right?
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting about this, too, is that for the smart and ambitious people, they're using this time as a huge self-improvement program. You know, they're either improving their mind, they're taking courses online, they're exercising. And interestingly, you know, the schools, the colleges and the universities and just school has sent everybody home to learn. And I think this is going to cause a collapse in ridiculously high student tuition for colleges, because nobody's going to pay $50,000 a year to learn online without getting a college experience. And all of that college real estate, because almost every university now is basically a hedge fund real estate investing company, right? And a branding agency. It's just ridiculous how far they've gotten away from their mission. I can't blame them, though. I mean, I would do it, too, if I was there. But, you know, all of that college real estate is going to, it's going to be reused. It's going to come up for sale. Those dorms are going to be sold as condos or turned into apartments, or I don't know what's going to happen.
Or become ghost towns.
Or become ghost towns,
I agree. College is clearly, the tide has come in, and the colleges were left standing naked on the beach.
The emperor has no clothes. It's a ripoff,
The college is clearly a scam because, they, like you said, they sent everyone home, and they were like, oh, we were kidding. You don't really need to be on campus to get the college experience. You can just do it all online.
I know.
But don't look at Coursera, where you have really great teachers teaching up-to-date stuff, or Code Academy, or Khan Academy,
Khan
or Masterclass, or LinkedIn Learning.
All of those,
Don't look at those, which have really great teachers and stuff. Just keep going to our old, out-of-date textbooks that we charge you $1,000 a book for. And by the way, get the hell out of the dorm rooms, because we got to take those over, but we're not giving you your money back.
They won't even refund the money. It's unbelievable. No. What a scam.
Business 101, possessions 9/10 of the law. Yeah. We got your money. See you later.
Yeah.
So I don't know why people would be excited about going to college, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I agree with you, though. I think, again, it's one of those things that what would have been a conversation 5 to 10 years from now is going to become a conversation tomorrow.
Much sooner, which is creative destruction. It's great. And, you know, the bottleneck in the college, I call it the university debt enslavement complex, okay, like the military industrial complex. The bottleneck seems to be the accreditation concept, right? You know, like the Khan Academy or Coursera is not accredited. You can't get that document. You can't get that degree. And as soon as they somehow figure out the roundabout to the accreditation thing, I mean, certainly some companies like Google will hire people without a degree now, and that's awesome because there are tons of smart people walking around without degrees. Then when you get around the accreditation bottleneck, then I think things really start to work.
I've thought a lot about this. So one thing is, you and I know that that accreditation aspect doesn't really make any sense. Like you say, you know, Google's actually hiring people without degrees, and many people would be willing to take a chance. If they see you have the skills, they'd rather have that than an MIT degree.
Sure.
But, you know, kids are influenced by their guidance school counselors and their other friends and their peers. They think you need college. It's really the kids now. They think you need college to get a job.
Yeah.
And it's not true. But, you know, maybe there's a business opportunity. Maybe you could, you get a panel of experts or whatever, educators, and you say, these online courses across these different platforms are, we're going to accredit. We're going to say this is a worthwhile computer science degree, and we'll verify it.
If there's a financial course that James Altucher and Ray Dalio endorse, and you have to pass it, a Wall Street firm should hire that person, right?
And I think that is a reasonable business plan. There's probably going to be some business models we're not even aware of now that are going to be in that category, because remote learning is definitely a thing that's going to ramp up big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think also, you know, maybe just people won't care about accreditation at some point, maybe, you know, which is the other extreme. And the opportunity now is creating more and more online courses. So, you know, an online course is fairly easy to set up. It's a good way to make a living. It's one of those make money while you sleep things.
Yeah.
And we all have the capabilities to be expert enough to teach non-experts something.
Right.
And so if you just start now, within 2 years or less, you could have a great online course that you're teaching and make a lot of money.
Yeah. And just for the record, I want to say that I don't think college is a scam in and of itself. I just think it's massively overpriced. You know, that's
right.
All. You know, I think if you could work your way through school with a part-time job and pay for it, it'd be okay. I have no objection to that. I just think when it increases in price at 3 or 4 times the rate of real inflation, that's a complete scam. It's ridiculous.
It has increased. Yeah, yeah. Tuitions have increased faster than inflation every single year for 50 years in a row.
Yeah. Well, so when the government insures the loans and floods money into the system, you get inflation. What a concept, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. James, give out your website.
It's jamesaltucher.com, or you could find me on Twitter at jaltucher, or find me on Instagram at altucher, or find me on TikTok at jamesaltucher. Just started doing my TikTok videos during this break.
That just proves beyond the shadow of a doubt you are hip and cool that you do TikTok. So
I hope my kids listen to this and you could tell them that.
Yeah. Well, have them listen, definitely, that their dad is hip and cool.
Thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Jason, thanks so much. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, HartmanMedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.